concern that if some areas, cities, states, or what have you, jump over those various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having the capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is that we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks. There is a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control, which in fact, paradoxically, will set you back, not only leading to some suffering and death that could be avoided, but could even set you back on the road to trying to get economic recovery.
It is Friday, May 15th, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, well, I usually talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. But today, Sean, well, he just couldn't take it anymore. He had to go to the reopened PA rally at Pennsylvania's Capitol. That's right. Stay safe, stay safe, Sean. And this week, well, God, this show, the never-ending evidence that elections have consequences. Wednesday evening, the right-wing dominated Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled Governor Tony Evers' stay-at-home order was, well, unconstitutional. Yep, following the ruling, the Tavern League of Wisconsin, you know, the people, the kind of trade-ins association for bars, restaurants, that kind of stuff, well, told all its members, open up their pubs ASAP. Yes, and soon social media was filled with pictures of packed bars with zero social distancing. The grand experiment has begun, everybody. Here it is. What happens? We're going to find out what this virus can really do. It's pretty crazy. Governor Evers could only say when he was interviewed on it by Ali Velshi on MSNBC that night, we're in the Wild West now. Indeed we are. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who you heard in today's intro, is one of the few trusted voices in the White House's coronavirus task force. Well, he testified remotely before the Senate this week, remotely because, of course, he's social distancing and self-quarantining because of people in the White House were found to test positive for coronavirus. Who knew? Anyways, Fauci told senators that spikes in deaths would soon be expected if states began to reopen without the proper protocols or protections in place. Surprise, surprise. And it seemed like one after another this week, stories about how public higher education is on the chopping block across the United States as disaster capitalist politicians use the cover of COVID-19 pandemic to institute mass layoffs and budget cuts. The deepest cuts thus far may just be those at Missouri Western State University, which may make it easier for other state university systems to do the same. We're going to get into that story a little bit because it's pretty crazy. On today's PA Focus, huge shout out to Shanna Danielson. Yes, Shanna, who is running for state senate in the 31st district. She got another big endorsement this week from Auditor General Eugene DePasquale. And his endorsement, DePasquale says, quote, Shanna is smart, hardworking, and brings the highest level of integrity. She will be a state senator that we can depend on to lead for our families and our community. Danielson, who's taken on the corporate shill Mike Regan, is running strong on her support for working families and state government that is focused on people first. Yes, not the corporate hacks. How about that? We need Shanna. Just full disclosure, I have donated to Shanna's campaign, and I would encourage you to do the same. You can check her out. Click the link on today's show. It'll take you right to her webpage. And Pennsylvania is not immune from those deep cuts in higher education we're just talking about. Local faculty union presidents at Kutztown University and Cheney University were notified this week that their administrations are considering eliminating adjunct tenure track and tenured faculty, and not to mention some program eliminations too as well. We'll throw those in too, right? Of course, Raging Chicken has been covering Pashi's deceptive budgeting and accounting practices for years. I went back and my very first article for Raging Chicken Press back in 2011 was about this. Crazy. Matter of fact, in many ways, we could say that those deceptive budgeting practices and what was going on with the Tea Party victories in 2010 was very much responsible for launching Raging Chicken. Crazy. Well, and Trump was in town. Yep, he visited a medical equipment supplier in the Lehigh Valley on Thursday. His landing at the Lehigh Valley International Airport was greeted not necessarily with a whole bunch of big fanfare, but it was greeted with a caravan of cars protesting his visit. Yes, the awesome folks at Make the Road were organized this action, and there were amazing videos of all along Route 22 in the Lehigh Valley, outside Allentown, between Allentown and Bethlehem, which is packed with a caravan of cars going to protesting Trump. And basically, you know, one of the signs for the caravan summed it all up. Said, quote, Trump failed 3,943 Pennsylvanians who are now dead from COVID-19. Yep. And that number was from yesterday, so we don't have that. That's not today's numbers. Of course, there were also dozens of Trumpistas lining the Industrial Boulevard in Upper Bukunji Township, where the medical supplier is. Most of them were not wearing masks. Again, the grand experiment has begun. What can you say?
You are an idiot!
And speaking of idiots, today, of course, is the big reopen PA rally in Harrisburg, underway as I record this. Yeah, early images look like every other Trump rally you can imagine. I haven't seen, this is not because they're not there yet, but I haven't seen the big, you know, AR-15s and all that kind of stuff going around yet. But they're going to be there because everything else, you know, it's like the staple of those things. So, yes, again, reopen PA. My favorite sign so far, I got to say, was fear is a liar. Not really sure what that means. And I also find it a bit ironic, too. Fear is a liar when you got the entire Trump campaign was built on the fear of the darkie from the South, right? The fear of the immigrant, right? These people, well, let's just give them the shout out, huh?
You are an idiot!
Yes, but you know what? Those idiots now run our federal government and have been systematically gutting our government, our federal thing, everything public, right? And, well, I'll wait. I'll get into this a little bit. But, yeah, so there you have it. And if you want to have any questions, things are starting to boil over. Well, here's something from my little hometown here, my adopted hometown, I should say. A 24-year-old man in Perksey, yes, my neck of the woods, punched a female store clerk in the face several times after she insisted that he wear a mask in the store. And I got to say, this is this little store. It's a little convenience store on West Walnut Street in Perkasie. It's a place where I've gone multiple times, right? I've talked to the owners and things like this. Pick up, we get ice cream for my kids and things like that there. And, yep, there you go. In today's last call, yes, NASA researchers have identified a string of lava tubes in the Hellas Planitia area of Mars. They may prove promising for a future Martian base. You see, lava tubes would help protect astronauts from the relentless solar radiation. And again, this lava tube story is not exactly the newest thing, I think, but it's just there was some interesting writing about it this week, and as they're really starting to think strongly about how to do this. And today, one of the largest pieces of space junk in history landed back on Earth on Monday. It was an 18-ton empty core stage from a Chinese rocket that was launched on May 5th. And that came down in, passed directly over Los Angeles and Central Park of New York before landing in the Atlantic Ocean. They were a little scared. I guess it was the biggest piece since Skylab entered the atmosphere and broke up. And it was completely uncontrolled, right? There was no way that they had doing anything about it. Crazy. And Free Will Brewing rolled out its new online store and began offering shipping to PA addresses. I know I talked about this last week, but I'm just giving a shout out again today, this week, because, man, they're doing what they can for our community here, too, as well, and producing great stuff. Sun Servants, that tasty Hellas lager, is back in stock and ready for shipping. And I'll have a report back on their sweet cherry vanilla mash, which I mentioned last week, was released last week, and oh, mwah. You can check out their store at freewillbrewing.store. That's freewillbrewing.store. And you can order online, and you can pick it up at the main brewery in Perkasie, or you can have them ship it directly to you. And you know, if you get together with a bunch of your friends, and you hit that $125 threshold, well, they will ship it to you free. That's right. Free shipping on orders of $125 or more. Because I want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show, Free Speech TV, this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You stream the show live at freespeech.org, or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure you download the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcast. He also streams live when he's broadcasting, usually on all the social media platforms. He tweets on Twitter and on Facebook, and that's nightly. I got to check his time, though, because it was at 9 o'clock at night, and then for some reason I saw an earlier stream. I don't know if he's switching up the times on it, so I'll get back to you on that next week. Make sure that you're tuning in. But no matter what, if you can't tune in live, you can always get that podcast. Go check out the Rick Smith Show daily podcast wherever you get your podcast. And I want to thank our newest member, Richard from Bethlehem. Yes, Richard just became a member today, like an hour before I started recording. Thank you so much, Richard. And Richard is tuning in right at a good time, or becoming a member at a good time, too, because as I mentioned a couple weeks back, we are now in kind of like beta testing, if you will. I don't know if it's probably like, I don't know, omega testing or something. Our live stream, matter of fact, today's show, I'm actually live streaming. It's not kind of for public view at this point, right? It's but we're testing it out to see if it goes forward and see how it works, make sure that everything's up and running. This live stream it's also being recorded, and it will be available for members. Members will be able to access that at patreon.com/rcpress. If you're a member, you already have access to this thing. It'll automatically come up in your feed. If you have any problem getting that, let me know. But hey, you know what? If you want a progressive future, we need progressive media, and you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media, just like Richard did. You can do that today. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network, trying things like live streams, going ahead, seeing what we can bring in. I'm looking at doing a call-in show, probably a shorter call-in show, maybe Mondays. I'll have to look into that, where you can actually call in, and it'll be mostly audio, I believe, at this point, so you can check that out. But yeah, we're doing everything we can to prepare for the fight of our future, for the fight of our lives in 2020, and we're all in. We need you. So help keep the media in the movement, the media. Become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. And this may be a little bit of a later upload than usual. Simply because I'm just slow moving today. I gotta be honest with you. Sean got in touch with me a couple days ago or yesterday. Said he's got to be out of here by 12 because of this a reopen PA rally that he just got. He's tired. He's tired of sheltering a place. He wants everything to reopen. No. Obviously not. Sean is there with his camera, I assume, covering that rally, giving some pictures and things like this. So I'm sure you can check him out on the Kitchen Snaps and Instagram to see some of his latest pictures, as well as following him on Twitter, which, by the way, if this is not a kind of a big move, I don't know what it is, but Sean, you cannot no longer follow Sean as at @RCPress_Sean. Nope. Sean has officially abandoned the RC Press from his Twitter feed. I'm sorry to say, but it's true. Sean, he's a professional. He's making sure that he doesn't have any poor associations, let's say, to operations like this one. So Sean is no longer that. So he is now Pensilinger. That's at @PENNSYLINGER. That's Pensilinger. I guess that's how you say it. And you'll still see his Give Me Breadcrumbs or Give Me Death up at the top there too as well. But it's a big time. Sean, he got his Twitter start with RC Press, became a legend, and now he's moving on, he's moving on. So anyways, Pensilinger, hopefully we'll catch you next week. But hit him up and, you know, let him know that you missed him today's show. That'd be great. We'll see. Okay, let's just get into a little bit of this stuff. This what happened in Wisconsin this week. It really is the grand experiment, right? We know every medical expert is out there has been talking about what happens with the coronavirus, saying that if you go ahead and open up, right, you open up the states, go back to quote unquote business as usual, that is going to lead to an increased number of coronavirus cases, and by extension, an increased number of coronavirus deaths, right? And sicknesses and illnesses and hospitalizations. Now, if you recall, the whole reason for doing social distancing, the whole reason for doing wearing masks in public, for example, this is not to change the nature of the virus, right? Because this does not change the nature of the virus, right? If we social distance and we stay away from things, we kind of close down the schools, we have our kids at home, we work remotely, we wear masks in public, we avoid going out if we can't, we keep 6 to 8 feet distance from people. All that is not to enact something on the virus, to change something on the virus. The virus is the same exact virus as it was before we started these measures, right? This is pretty kind of easy stuff at this point, I hope. So when you stop doing those things, right, and the virus is still there, still waiting, right, hanging out, guess what happens? More people get it again, right? Why? Let's go back to the beginning, because this is a novel coronavirus. Our bodies have not seen it before. We do not have natural immunities to it because we've not been exposed to it before. So we're going to naturally see more cases and more severe cases and more deaths. All right. So having said that, right, there are people that are really, you know, seriously thinking about how do we get back to some degree of, you know, social engagement or civic engagement, at least economic engagement and so on. And that's justifiably a concern. Look, I mean, I'm sure I am not the only one who's going a little bit stir crazy being at home all the time. I'll admit it. I went to Home Depot yesterday to get some rocks for my garden. And I was there for probably like 10 minutes tops. Like I went in, knew what I wanted. They had it, got it, and left. Everyone had masks on. Everyone was keeping social distance stuff. You know, I made sure that I kind of took my mask off, right? I had gloves on and I turned the gloves inside out. And I came home, washed everything down, all that kind of stuff, right? But that felt weird. I'll say to you right off the bat, it felt weird even going out to that much. The only places I've really been up until that has been the grocery store. And so anyways, I mean, my point being is that those things, like, you know, okay, yes, I'm at home, I'm doing more stuff in my garden because I need to do certain particular things, but even doing that requires stuff, right? And I think that we would want to get back to some degree of kind of quote-unquote openness as long as we can stay safe, right? The whole idea here is that even if we open and we're safe, more people are still going to get the virus. I hate to break it to you, right? But what we need to do is to make sure that this is not a spike, right, that completely overwhelms our medical facilities, right? I mean, that was the whole reason for doing it initially, not to change the virus, right? As much as, like, you know, Trump and his cronies and, you know, every other kind of, like, little idiot.
You are an idiot!
Wants to think that somehow we've defeated this, we've won, right? It just, you don't win against the virus, right? I mean, eventually you come up with a vaccine that hopefully works to mitigate some of the effects. But I mean, like, think about the flu virus. I mean, this is not the flu, right? This is not a flu. Let's be clear about that. But you think about the, you know, the flu virus, right? And they come up with vaccines every year. And even then, sometimes they miss. Sometimes it's not the right strain that they plan for. And sometimes, you know, it's more effective and less effective. It helps, right? But it's still is not perfect, and no vaccine is perfect in that way. And there's going to be side effects, right? There's going to be problems with the trials and things like this. So whatever. So anyways, what happened in Wisconsin, right? Remember that we just had an election, right? Not too long ago. And one of the things on the ballot was, you know, had to do with the Supreme Court, right? And the Supreme Court is now dominated, and the Supreme Court of Wisconsin is now dominated by, you know, really ideological warriors, right, on the right. And there was, you know, some folks sued the governor for his stay-at-home orders, you know, basically saying, like you see on all these crazy shows, that, you know, he was, you know, becoming a dictator by using these emergency powers well beyond the time that he's supposed to use them and so on. Okay, that's great. That's fine. That's a nice little fantasy you got going there, but whatever. But they took that lawsuit. They brought it forward, right? And because that they had put people in place on the Supreme Court in their state who agree with this kind of libertarian far-right ideology, they were receptive to that argument, right? Now, if you listen to some of the kind of the legal scholars who've been talking about that case, people in Wisconsin in particular, who study law in the state, to say the state Supreme Court's decision was not based on precedent. It was, you know, had scant any case law to back it up. It had to do with a complete reinterpretation of the state's constitution. So, you know, for all those people who are always kind of saying, hey, we don't want activist judges, well, here you go. You got them now. The thing is that as soon as that happened, you've probably seen some of these images already. As soon as that happened, the Tavern Association, what is it called? The Tavern League of Wisconsin, you know, trade association for bars and pubs and that kind of stuff. They basically said to the members, hey, we're open. Open immediately. Tonight. Let's do it. Right, go, 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 go. We're going to show them, right? And look, in some areas, bars opened, maybe a few people showed up. But in other areas, bars were packed, right? There was a kind of pretty good article in, let me see where it was, in the Washington Post about this, right? Let me read you just the first part of this if you didn't get it. So it says, on Wednesday night, in the heart of downtown Platteville, Wisconsin, just hours after the Wisconsin Supreme Court threw out the state stay-at-home order, Nick's on 2nd was packed wall-to-wall, standing room only. It was sometime after 10 p.m. when long, cool woman in a black dress by the Hollies came over the sound system, and a bartender took out his camera. In a Twitter broadcast, he surveyed the room of maskless patrons crammed together, partying like it was 2019. A few were pounding on the bar to the beat, some were clapping their hands in the air, and some were fist pumping, a scene so joyous they could have been celebrating the end of the worst pandemic in a century. Instead, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers knew they were just celebrating the apparent end of his power over them, at least for now. And that's what it was. And you can check that out. You know, you can go in the link in the show notes if you want to kind of check that out. And that's exactly what happened. And here we go. So there's the reopening question, and then there's the reopening with no the proper protocols, none of the proper protocols. And you heard Tony Fauci today, you know, in the intro today, saying, "Look, this was going to happen. These states open too quickly, right? Or they're not giving clear guidance, right? Or rules or regulations about how to open. We're going to see spikes." And my guess is going to be, and we've talked about this before. I mean, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report has often said that, you know, it's going to be interesting when people start to correlate the data between cases of COVID-19 and deaths and Fox News viewership and Trump voters, right? And we already saw this. We talked about this in the podcast, I think, a couple of weeks ago, where there's some studies already. They're just comparing those viewers who watch Sean Hannity and those viewers who watch Tucker Carlson, both kind of right-wing folks on Fox News. The only difference there is that Tucker Carlson, right, says the virus is real, right, and says this pandemic is real, and Sean Hannity says it's all a bunch of malarkey, to use Joe Biden's word, right? It's all a bunch of, you know, fake news. And what happens? Sure enough, you have higher rates of infection and higher rates of death of those folks who watch Sean Hannity. Okay? So now, across Wisconsin, we're going to get a case study, because there are some cities and some municipalities, for example, the areas in Milwaukee and areas of around University of Wisconsin-Madison, who still issued citywide stay-at-home orders or gave more guidance. And they didn't have the massive people packed in bars. There were some, of course, right? But there's going to be even differences across the state. And we're going to see what those differences are. We're going to be able to break that down by kind of voting patterns, and we're going to break it down by Fox News viewership, and we're going to be able to break it down in the worst possible way. We're going to correlate ideological commitments with deaths. Think about that. Just think about that. I don't know about you, but that's not where I want to go. And that instance of what we saw with those live streams from those bars that open have illustrated something that I've brought up on this show several times now. It's that when you say to people, even this, I've been talking about this in particular in Pennsylvania, we're saying Governor Wolf is basically issuing this kind of, you know, three-tier system where you're either red, yellow, or green, right? Red means you're locked down, you know, still, you know, the pandemic is raging, everything stays in place. Yellow, you begin to kind of a little bit easing because the number of cases have dropped, right? And start to slowly begin to kind of look at kind of opening and setting grounds and procedures, making sure that there's testing, making sure that there's adequate hospital beds, making sure that there's contact tracing, all that kind of stuff needs to be in place. And then if it goes, I think it's 10 days, 2 weeks, if that's still going okay with not an increase in cases, then kind of move to a broader reopening. Right. And my contention was always that, look, unless you actually have enforcement mechanisms, unless you actually have ways of making sure that these counties, different counties, are on board, when you go from red to yellow, right, in Governor Wolf's scheme, right, you basically say, okay, yep, we're beginning the process of reopening. The reaction to that, right, at the everyday level, right, is not going to be, okay, let me see what the scientists say. What were the exact protocols that we need to follow? No, right? If you are in an area, especially if you're in an area that has been inundated with this idea that, you know, Governor Tom Wolf is a dictator and he's using his powers as a way to keep us down and it's a Democratic conspiracy and this whole pandemic is wrong. The way that that's going to be responded to is not in this measured way. People are just going to, it's all or nothing, right? It's an on-off switch. I mean, that's how we think in our culture anyways, right? It's pro-con, either or, black, white, yes, no, right? I spend time in my classrooms teaching students like, okay, we're going to try to get beyond like, you know, an either or light switch approach to argumentation, right? Ways of thinking. But that's how this stuff works, right? And if you, especially on the right, especially when the Fox News viewership, that's exactly how it is. It is everything is absolutely clear cut pro or con, either or, this side or that side, right? And so that's what's going to happen. People are just going to flood it. And we saw it in Wisconsin. Perfect example, right? And if you look at what the court actually said, right, it didn't say that the pandemic is not real. It didn't say that, you know, that opening up was going to lead to more deaths or not. No, what it said is that, you know, the governor has to go back and has to work with the legislator in order to kind of come up with more sensible regulation, blah, 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 blah. Right. They knew exactly what they were doing. Of course, they were just undercutting the entire power of a Democratic governor. If you remember when this is what Scott Walker did, when Scott Walker got defeated in Wisconsin, is they tried to strip away, right, as much of the power of the governor as possible before Evers took office, for exactly this reason, right? I mean, so, you know, we can talk hypocrites, we can talk about all that kind of stuff, but the fact of the matter is that we're in a situation now that people are going to die. And I think this is going to be rolling across the country now. I mean, we saw the outlandish suit that was put in place that, you know, they sued Governor Tom Wolf. If you remember back to 2010, is that when we saw these Tea Party victories and then we saw these pieces of legislation like, you know, anti-worker legislation, gutting the public sphere, all that kind of stuff, they rolled across the country and they were pretty consistent, right? And that's because the right has a legal infrastructure, it has an academic infrastructure, it has an intellectual infrastructure, it has a media infrastructure that it can coordinate across these areas. Even though there's all these disagreements on the right, they still can coordinate, in a sense, messaging and kind of approach on the right. And so you basically had similar bills that were being put forward across the country, right? Again, one of the reasons why we launched Raging Chicken. Same thing is going on now, right? You've got these lawsuits that are being brought against governors, right? And very similar kinds of language and testing the power of the governor to, you know, with these stay-at-home orders. It's going to be dangerous. And so, you know, there's going to be people who are just going to, they're going to go out and they're going to do what they're going to do. Watch the numbers in Wisconsin. That's all I can tell you. And we're going to see more after that. It was kind of ironic seeing Fauci testify this week. Fauci came out and basically said, you heard him on the intro, and said, you know, look, we're in for a return to even worse economic downturn, basically, if we come out too soon. It's like, so for all those who are out there saying we got to return, you know, keep America great, whatever the hell you're going to say, and keep America great means, you know, we have to get back to just making profit at all, you know, at all costs, right? Who cares who dies, right? It's just, you know, business first, that's the most important thing, you know, whatever, get the government out, all that kind of stuff. Well, he basically said this is where it is. And of course, after he testifies, now he's getting the cold shoulder from the Trump administration. So we'll see how, we'll just, you know, see how long Fauci's gonna last in that space. But who else is there, right? That's gonna be the crazy thing. There were some really interesting discussions this week that I didn't put in the show notes today. I didn't hear, but really digging in more to what's going on in the CDC, because CDC has been completely absent. There was some really good reporting on this over in The Guardian. There was some, I think it was The Times has a good articles about it. David Dayen has been doing phenomenal work on this. So do check that out too as well, because it's just, you know, it's a metaphor for what's going on here. It makes me, it's weird, but it makes me want to get CDC guard. I have, like, you know, like a hat, like CDC, that's what I want. I think that's what I'm gonna have to get, because I want to kind of support CDC. I mean, I don't know about you, but like, for me, like, the CDC was always one of these you know, organizations that was amazing, right? I mean, you'd see it in movies, right? When you have, like, you know, these pandemics and these outbreaks and all this other kind of stuff, and or some kind of weird disease, and it's all over in science fiction stuff when trying to figure out what's going on with some sort of invasion or something. The CDC, because we recognize the CDC for the longest time as, like, the, you know, like the gold standard, right? And how you organize a society, right? And a research body and a research institution, a research process, and a concentration of some of the best scientists to be able to track this stuff and plan. That's right? What we want. And the CDC, you know, helped set up disease, you know, CDCs in countries around the world too, right? I mean, they were recognized as being kind of leaders. And they were never like, well, I mean, I'm sure if I'd have to qualify this, I'd have to look more in particular, but I've never seen the CDC politicized in the way that it's being politicized now. And the way it's being politicized is like telling them to shut up, right? And having nonsense being spoken instead. So there's that. We also had a whistleblower case this week, which I also didn't mention. The guy who was basically demoted and kicked down for saying truth about viruses. But there's that too as well. So we'll see what's going on. So one story I want to talk about before we get into today's more PA-focused stuff is what is happening here when it comes to public higher education, and again, I understand there's folks who are going to, you know, hear me talk about higher education. I know that if Sean was on the show right now, his eyes would probably begin to roll because he knows I'm going to get in a little bit into the weeds and stuff. But, you know, this is the area that I come from. There's no doubt about it. And so these stories do pop up. But I want to be clear is like, you know, for me, and I guess this is a personal problem in some ways, right? Because higher education, public or private for that matter, but public especially, had such a important place in the way that I understood the world, right? I mean, I bought into all the kind of, you know, hype and arguments and ideology that was... you know, especially in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, 80s and 90s, and especially when, you know, the whole idea was that, you know, education will set you free, right? Education is the answer. And now I know now, you know, I would say that my higher education has been a slow process of disabusing me of that idea about higher education. That, you know, this guy, Paulo Freire, actually I have a shirt on now. It says a Paulo Freire shirt. But Paulo Freire, he was a Brazilian educator who basically came up with educational processes and theories that were about empowerment and were about liberation, which were about collective emancipation, right? I won't get into all the details of Paulo Freire. If you don't know him, check him out. Pedagogy of the Oppressed, right? That's the first book. So... anyways, he why did I bring him up? Well, he has in one of his books, I think it was Education for Critical Consciousness, but he basically says that education cannot be the engine of emancipation precisely because it should be. All right. And what he meant by that was that, look, there's... If we lived in an equitable society, if we lived in a society that valued human emancipation and equality and the pursuing of, say, okay, you know, sustainable futures, right, of valuing human beings, of doing all that kind of stuff, then education would be that. But education doesn't exist in that future because that future doesn't exist, right? So our education system is necessarily tied to the goals of this society, right? And yes, there's great work that happens for educators across the, you know, across the country and across the world who are resisting that system and so on, but it's still part of that system, right? I mean, it's just like, you know, if you are working in, I mean, any place, you know, if you're working in a food service job, right? And you are kind of like, you know, say you're working in shipping receiving. This is what I did for years, right? You're working in shipping receiving. Right. The receiving of those goods and putting them away and preparing them, getting them ready for, you know, for those events that are coming up, that is part of that system. Now, we had a union, right? And I helped organize or start. I wouldn't say even helped organize. I learned some of the very preliminary aspects of organizing back then. I was treated to it. And I was like, I didn't even know what the hell I was doing half the time. But the union, because it's like, even if you unionize that workforce, where you can't just be told to do, you know, things that are wrong, or you have to have some degree of protection or something like this. And I notice that things are happening wrong, or they say it like a manager is abusing another worker, or, you know, they're, you know, using outdated food or something like this. I can report that without fear of losing my job, right? Yes, I mean, I could still be threatened and all that kind of stuff, but I can speak up, right? But even my speaking up, right, in an organized workplace, right, I'm still working as part of that workplace, as part of that capitalist endeavor, right? So there's always those kind of limits. So, and you think about with unions, and I believe this 100%, right? Making unions, making them easier to join, right, is an awesome thing. The more we organize, the more that you have workers have power, have concrete power in the workplace, even capitalist workplace, the more that we get toward that goal, right, of getting rid of that structure, right? But you cannot do it without power, organized power, right? And that's always the struggle, right? So no matter what where we're working. If we're, you know, elected official, if we're working in a bake shop, if we're working in higher education like me, right? We can have ideas, individuals, right? We can have ideas about what this thing should be. And there's ideologies about kind of workers and knowledge and higher education, all this kind of stuff. And anytime something comes out and says it's like just a capital G good, right? And it wants us to believe that, you know, higher education is a solution for everything. Not so much. Working class power is the solution. That's it. Right? So until then, you know, we're always in the process of struggle. So anyways, I pay attention to this stuff. This week, stories started to emerge about these deep cuts that are happening across the country in higher education. Okay? And I've said this on the show. I hate doing this, but you know, I've talked about this on the show quite a bit, and I've talked about ways that we can expect that public officials, right, are going to use this pandemic as cover for carrying out deep austerity and transformations of the rest of the things that are public. Right? Higher education, public higher education in particular, is one of them. Okay? So there's a story that comes from Inside Higher Ed, and it focuses on Missouri Western University, right? Missouri Western State University is probably the worst example. And I just want to read to you a couple things from this article and then kind of talk through it a little bit, and then we'll kind of go into break. But so here's the beginning of this story. Again, this is from Inside Higher Ed. Of all the faculty cuts made during COVID-19 pandemic so far, those at Missouri Western State University may be the deepest. The institution is laying off 31 non-tenured instructors, including some on the tenure track, at the end of this year. 20 remaining professors will receive terminal one-year contracts, meaning that about one quarter of full-time faculty will be gone by 2021. It's a year. Others will take early retirement. Dozens of majors, minors, and concentrations are being cut too, including English, history, philosophy, political science, economics, sociology, Spanish, French, and the arts. It's hard to overstate how much is changing. All right. So this is a perfect example of this. And, you know, look at that list. English, history, philosophy, political science, economics, sociology, Spanish, French, and art. You got to wonder what the hell's left, right? Well, if you've been following what's happened in higher education, and like, you know, if you're a position like me, if you're in, you know, in higher education, and you hear what state legislators, Republican ones, because this is a Republican-dominated legislature in Pennsylvania, but frankly, Democrats have been hand in glove with them for decades, right? Matter of fact, a lot of the changes that we're seeing, the pushes to change towards more market-friendly process started with Ed Rendell, right? I mean, Ed Rendell was one of the ones who ushered in some of the weird financing practices and advocated for some questionable budgeting practices. If you go back and read some stuff from Raging Chicken Press, there's this article that I wrote called Wall Street on the Susquehanna, and that is precisely about some of these practices. One was called off-balance sheet financing. I won't get into the weeds right about on it here, but it was one of those things that contributed to a false sense of crisis, right, and a kind of a shifting of control over budgeting to the dark rooms of kind of the administrative hierarchy. Right. You'll also remember that we have a short documentary. The first time we ever did a little documentary is with Colleen Bradley from Westchester University. And Colleen Bradley blew the whistle on these kind of practices, not just the off-balance sheet financing stuff, but also in basically lying to faculty, staff, and students in the public by creating two sets of books, right? The books that you show to faculty, staff, and students in the public, and the books that you show to your, say, accrediting agency, or you show to each other to decide how much money you really have, right? And she blew the whistle on this. Though these have been around for a while, and the move has been to make everything, say, workforce oriented, right? To the point where actually, they want you to say, okay, do your economic analysis of which businesses need jobs and create majors for those particular jobs. Okay. Now, let me say, there's some utility in doing some those kind of things. Okay. I'm actually part of a major called SMS, which is Social Media Theory and Strategy. And there's a demand for, say, capable, well-trained, critically thinking social media managers for nonprofits, for for-profit corporations, and for in the political sphere, right? There's those demands. And we filled a niche, and it's a great program. Okay. But there's that kind of stuff. But to say that everything should be like that is crazy. Because remember that in this country, right, that higher education, there's always been a tension, right? But there's higher education has had two, primary purposes. Number one has been, yes, those things we hear all the time. You want a good job, you get a good job, you get training, blah, 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 blah. Right. But even then, that whole idea about job training and things like this, that wasn't the way things used to be. Right. You see what happened is it used to get a broad based education, and then you'd go and you get training on the job. Right. They were looking for people who were capable and interested and willing and blah, blah, blah. But you got most of your training, the skills training stuff, on the job. And slowly over time, right, what's happened is that corporations have offloaded that, right? They've lobbied legislators, right? They've demanded things from the politicians. And they've slowly offloaded the training that they do as part of their job as a corporation, as a business. And they've offloaded that onto higher education, in particular public higher education. Right. Because then state legislators have control over that. They get their corporate dollars and they get the response and they can show, look what we did for you. Right. Pretty straightforward. So anyways, that's slowly happened. And so now generally we used to ask people about going to college. They say, you need to go to college, get a good job. Right. OK. I don't even buy that anymore, but we'll get that another time. The idea is, yeah, it's partial, right? And you can't – I don't want to deny the fact that there's a role, an important role that higher education plays in that. But there's a whole other part about why we have public higher education, specifically public higher education, right? It's the idea is that you're training citizens, and I'm using citizens in a broad sense, like – people who are part of a particular community, not the legalized, who's a citizen, who's not a citizen, that stuff. But you're engaged with training that next generation that are going to be effective, critical, kind of critically engaged in the self-governance of the community, right? Not just the leaders at the top, but all of us. So that part of our ethics, part of the ways that we think about, part of the ways that we think about, number one, like, hey, there's a problem in my community. What's the first thing you do? You get with your neighbors and you organize. And then here's some of the ways of critically thinking about how might we strategize about how to do these kinds of things, right? And to be known that here's the avenues that you have to go forward, and you know how to go forward, that someone can't hide the ball on you because you know, right? That was kind of the whole idea, right? The whole idea about democratic education was supposed to be embedded in public higher education. And that's been slowly stripped away. And if you look at that list from Missouri Western State University, English, history, philosophy, political science, economics, sociology, Spanish, French, and the arts, those are all things that are about the human being, about our collaborative culture, our ability to exercise power and to think critically, the ones that think not just about the bottom line, right, but our values. Right? Those are being taken away. And again, so why do I focus on this, and why focus on this article? Well, does this mean that every place is going to be as bad as this? No, it does not mean that. But it does mean that they set a bar. And the way that this stuff works, right, in any kind of political emergent idea or movement, is that someone comes forward and does this, and it makes it that much easier for the next business or organization or university in this case to do the same thing, right? Because they broke the glass, right? Broke the glass. And if you read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine, right, this is what we're going to be living through, what we are living through and will continue to be living through for the next couple of years, is going to be disaster capitalism writ large. Thus far, the disaster capitalists, those people who basically in a disaster, when there's a crisis, right? This is Milton Friedman, basically, you know, Chicago economist, coming in basically saying, in a crisis, people look for the ideas that are lying around, right? And the right wing in this country has specialized in that process. They've invested in their intellectual, into their institutional, in their media infrastructure, all that stuff, so that their ideas are there lying around and ready to take hold in instance of a crisis. It's the first time we've seen it to such a large degree as a national and global crisis. And now we're in a battle to see whether or not we go to this next stage of kind of dystopia, really. So we shall see. Disaster capitalists look at this. They say, hey, look, crisis. People are freaked out. Budget, budget, budget. You tell everybody there's no money, there's no money, there's no money. And then you say, well, then we're going to have to do this. And you hope you get people afraid and cynical enough that they look at you and they say, like, oh, I guess there's nothing we can do. Okay, we'll take a pay cut. I'm sorry that a third of my friends and colleagues are going to be fired. Oh, yes, I cared so much about my program, about English, about history, about political science. But I understand there has to be sacrifices, right? Meanwhile, at the very same moment, Jeff Bezos is about to become the world's first trillionaire. Right? That's your lens. They want you to think about a shrinking pie, and they want you to be thankful for the crumbs. That's not what's going on. They're basically baking loads and loads of pies, but they're shipping them all to other folks. And we're asked to fight over among ourselves. This is what I'm saying. Without power, without organized, collective, working class power, there is no possibility of getting people to see what we need to transform. Right? And education. All the critical education you could possibly have in the world is not going to cut it, right? I just back and forth with a colleague of mine the other day when he was saying, we were talking about this. He said, what do you think this means? We'll get to this in the next segment a little bit. What do you think it means that we're, you know, about this retrenchment stuff? What does that mean? I'm like, basically before I read this article, I was basically listening. This is the kind of thing that we can expect to, you know, greater or lesser degrees in my mind. He's like, but that's not even a university, he said. And he's not alone in saying this. It's just kind of a caution. And I said, yeah, but you know what? My idea of what a university is, his idea of university is another colleague of mine, which he was saying the same thing. That is not the idea of the university that is, you know, inhabited, right? The people do not who run our universities don't think like that. They think like bean counters. They think like disaster capitalists. And they think about bringing more power and control to themselves, right? And, you know, frankly, I've gotten really upset with our own, say, our own faculty union, for example, because at the very moment where organized power is of the utmost importance, right? Our union decided to go with things like, you know, shared interest bargaining, whatever the hell you want to call it. Right, the idea that, you know, we're going to be friends with management, we can work out of things that we all work on together. Right, it's such a fundamentally misreading of our moment. It's such a fundamentally misreading of our moment, and it's happening locally. It's happening at all this kind of stuff. Right, and there's going to be faculty members, I guarantee you right now too, as well. And this is where faculty and workers of all sorts. But you know, this I look at it like this. It's like we're our own worst enemies. Right. Is because, yes, you've got those disaster capitals up there, but you also have opportunists, right? You also have people who have got their own vision about how they want things to be locally, very small, right? And they have resentments against other workers, right? Or other departments or other areas. And they think that they're not getting their you know, or their idea is not what it is, and they want other people to be like them. And so they inch their ways into kind of little positions of power, whether it's within a faculty union, whether it's with the administration, whatever it might be, right? And they utilize that. They use the language of, you know, working for everybody in order to assist in the restructuring of that university, right? And ultimately, they don't give a shit about who pays, right? It's such an anti-solidarity move to basically look at fellow workers, right? Work at people that you work with, your colleagues, resent them for it, and then try to make them pay, right? But that's what happens in these moments, right? And so expect more of that too as well. Not only is it going to be more strained, right? It's going to get more tense, right? And it's going to be more infighting. It's like read Franz Fanon about what happens, right, in cultures of violence, right? Wretched of the Earth, read that. You can see he talks about horizontal violence. And obviously here we're not talking about guns and knives and things like this, but it's a similar process. When we live in these situations, we take our cues from the way that those folks operate, and we end up even unconsciously acting in those ways too as well. Unless we have some sort of countervailing force, like an organized, powerful, militant union, right? So there you have it. So definitely check that out. I have to give kudos to Gary Rhodes. Gary Rhodes is someone of this kind of a writer that I followed for years. It talks about, you know, basically, you know, what the free market is doing to higher education, looking at what capitalism is doing to higher education, all this stuff. And at the end of that Inside Higher Ed article, this is what he says. He says, Gary Rhodes, director of the Center for Study of Higher Education at the University of Arizona, doesn't have a crystal ball either, of course, but asked how unique Missouri Western is among the many fiscally strapped colleges and universities now navigating the pandemic. Rhodes said he sees three patterns emerging. As usual, he said, the most precarious instructional ranks, contingent faculty members and graduate students are being and will be the first and worst hit through silent layoffs, aka non-renewals. That's already happening at Kutztown University, by the way, where I am. Next, he said, there is disaster academic capitalism, which I've written elsewhere. It doesn't need to be academic capitalism, just disaster capitalism. You know, we're not special. Those institutions that had been experiencing enrollment and fiscal challenges pre-COVID-19 will amplify their restructuring, using the crisis to restructure and retrench, with management trying to bypass deliberative strategic shared governance. Yep. Even if this isn't the case at Missouri Western, based on faculty accounts of shared governance, Rhodes said he knows of no institution that has addressed such challenges by reinvesting in core academic programs and personnel and incrementally reduced administrative costs. Overall, Rhodes also remarked on a heightened discourse of austerity, even as divestment in core academic functions continues to the detriment of students and from marginalized populations, most of all. That's what we're in for. He's right on the money. Right? So do check out that article from that's Gary Rhodes. And coming at the end of that article from Inside Higher Ed, and the article is called Not the Same University, particularly the focus on Missouri Western, the cuts 50% of their faculty, along with programs in history, political science, sociology, economics, English, music, and more. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this with today's PA Focus. And maybe we'll do PA Focus and Last Call together. Maybe we'll see. All right, Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day of the founding of the Library Employees Union of Greater New York. This was the first public library workers union in the United States. From its beginning, one of the key efforts of the union was the fight for equal rights for women and men in the library field. Maud Malone was one of the leading spokeswomen for the union. She was also an active supporter of the campaign for women to win the right to vote. The union leaders worked to build relationships with other women's rights organizations. According to a report on the first 2 years of the union's activities, the union arose out of the need to remedy the particularly bad working conditions and wages of librarians, especially in the public libraries of the city. The union wanted to improve the promotion system, especially for women. In order to strengthen their cause, the union leaders corresponded with libraries as far away as England, France, Australia, Africa, and South America. These exchanges centered on discussing the library question from the union point of view. Promoting the union point of view to library workers proved to be a tough task. The union tried to convince library employees to think of themselves as workers and part of the working class. The union advocated for library employees to be included as part of the city's civil service system. But many of these workers thought of themselves as professionals. And in the end, this hesitancy to buy into the idea of unionization led to the downfall of the Library Employees Union, which ended its efforts in 1929. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Here going solo once again today. Sean is at the Open Up PA or Open PA or Reopen PA rally, wherever the hell it's called. The place where you can hear shouted from the buildings surrounding the protest.
Wow.
I really would like to put that on blast around some of these protests. It'd be great. But we'll start with some good stuff. First of all, kudos, shout out here to Shanna Danielson, who's running for the state Senate in the 31st district. That's kind of, if you look at Harrisburg and you go kind of Harrisburg to the west and south a bit, right? She's in that area, Carlisle area, that kind of stuff. Shanna is awesome. She has run before, and she has just kind of built up more steam. Now she's running against, of course, Mike Regan. Mike Regan has been like horrible when it comes to environmental impacts, when it comes to kind of gun legislation, when it comes to union support of working families, when it comes to immigration, when it comes to, you get the idea. He's one of those guys. So Shanna's taken him on and got a huge endorsement from Eugene DePasquale this week. So just shout out to Shanna Danielson. Sorry, Shanna. If you can help her out, you can donate to her campaign. Like I said off the top, I've donated to Shanna's campaign. I think it is one of the races that is most important in many ways, because it looks like it is going to be not only winnable, right, but it would represent a significant shift in a part of the state. Right. And I shouldn't say, and it's not just, Shanna doing this alone. The organizing that is happening in that area of the state has been ongoing for years now. And it's been amazing organizing. And Shanna comes out of that. I mean, she comes out of the Mothers Demand Action and has not stopped. She's a teacher. She's got some great videos of her playing the flute with her students on Zoom, up online on her Facebook page, which is a lot of fun. If you can, go to shanna4pa.org. That's Shanna, that's S-H-A-N-N-A, shanna4pa, one word, .org. shanna4pa.org. And you can check out her campaign, and you can click donate right there to help out her campaign. She's already raised over $40,000, ahead of the June 2nd, primary. And, she is just on fire. So get out there, donate to Shanna Danielson for Senate, if you can, for state Senate. And, again, it's shanna4pa.org. Trump was in town. Yes, everybody. Made a little PA visit as he's trying to kind of get away from the disaster that's going on in Washington, D.C. and his handling of the pandemic, to try to kind of get back to his normal campaigning, which he can't really do very well. So, but he kind of flew into ABE, which is Lehigh Valley International Airport. And there was all sorts of Secret Service, anything, not a whole lot of fanfare at the airport. I think even people at the airport were a little reluctant to see this guy come in, but is what it is. But I began seeing these signs, heard about it the early part of the week, but you never know how this stuff is going to come out. And sure enough, man, Make the Road, and the work they're doing in Lehigh Valley, number one, is just top notch, right? It just can't be beat. So Make the Road Action was out there organizing for here and showing creative ways of organizing a pandemic. They organized a car caravan to head out to the airport as Trump was coming in. And there was these great shots that somebody was filming of just car after car after car after car going down Route 22 in Lehigh Valley toward the airport with all sorts of signs decked out against what Trump against Trump's visit and telling him to go home and put on a mask, which is great. At the same time, like out there, like I was saying, in Upper Macungie Township, yes, there were the kind of red, white, and bluers out there with their "Don't tread on me" signs and all that kind of stuff. Not wearing masks, greeting Trump and saying, "Yes, we want to reopen PA." So those are folks who were in the thing. But the real amazing action was what Make the Road did. It was a huge deal. Like I said, Sean is out there for the reopen PA rally in Harrisburg. If I take a quick peek into what's going on with that right about now, let's see if there's what the latest is on Twitter. I know that Sean is very happy to be out there for the reopen PA thing, but we'll see. It's just pretty crazy. Yep, somebody's out there with a truck. This is great. At the rally, it says 87% of Pennsylvanians favor caution and safety in PA's recovery. Right, little counter protesting going on there. Other people going out there to get in counter protests, some really great ones. Somebody showed up with a plague costume. I'm not sure if that was a counter protest or a protester, to be honest with you, but pretty cool. I have to kind of say that. And now you've got people out there, 70% died in nursing homes. That's your fault. There you go. Some good stuff. Anyways, so we'll see what happens there. Pennsylvania, again, is not alone with the crazies. These have been happening all over the place. The good thing is to start seeing some of the counter-protesting that's going on, which has been really heartening and encouraging. Gotta love that. And then just kind of a little shout-out for me. You know, it's like I have, my wife was saying the other day, too, is like, she's noticing more and more police just everywhere, right? And noticing people, more and more people being kind of on edge, like hearing more people just being angry and angry at like Governor Wolf or locking us down or, against the Democrats and that kind of stuff. And her read on it was kind of all the police said, these folks, this police probably know that people are getting frustrated and angry, and they're in a potentially dangerous, as the potential become more dangerous, especially when you got, this kind of like, reopen PA stuff. And then sure enough, right here in our own town, this little convenience store, on West Walnut, just great people were going to run the store to go in there. It's a little convenience store. They walked in there and the woman was like, "Hey, look, if you're going to be in the store, you got to put your mask on. You got to put a mask on." Right. And he refused. Right. And she insisted. And then he repeatedly hit her in the face. Right. And said all sorts of stuff, about dictatorship and all this other kind of stuff. And there you go. It's like right there. Now he was arrested. They found out who he was. He's arrested. If you want the details, you can go look it up in the show notes. I'm not going to talk about it. I don't want to give this guy any more publicity than he deserves. But that's kind of where we're at, right? You got these people who are steeped in this kind of anti-government conspiracy theory stuff. And then you add into that whatever alcohol and drugs. I have no idea if that was involved or not, or if it was just pure ideology this guy was stoned on. But, that's going to happen. And you listen to what happens at these reopen rallies and you listen to what some of the things that people say, that degree of anger is there. Right. And again, these people are a minority. Right. These people are a small segment of the population. Sean is always quick, to respond that, hey, look, if you look at the polling data, right? Like Trump's numbers are tanking. Like the support for these policies are tanking. The vast majority of people are don't want everything to open up really fast. So they're a minority, but they're a minority that can do a lot of damage, right? And so that's kind of the issue there. Lastly, before kind of, yeah, I guess I was going to do today's last call with this segment too as well. Kind of a little bit of a condensed show on that end. I did want to talk about, say, what happened locally here. Locally, I mean, kind of at Kutztown University where I work, right? So, where I used to work, I'm now doing everything virtually. So I'm whatever. This week, Kutztown University faculty, right when was the day that our grades were due, right? The day before our grades were due, right? This is last Tuesday. Kutztown University President Kenneth Hawkinson talked with the union president, Tom Stewart, and basically informed the union that the university intends to invoke or is invoking Article 29 of the faculty contract. And Article 29 is called the retrenchment contract, and that is basically the process based alerting that, yes, due to changes in finances, all right, that's the official languages, that we're looking, they're going to look at cutting faculty and staff and programs. And what's important about this article is that it's different than just, say, for example, not rehiring people. We talked about that in the first segment today, is that when you do not renew somebody's contract, right, or you cut down their teaching load, which Kutztown University did before the coronavirus pandemic, I'll be clear about that. This was going on before. Remember, Kutztown University president and provost had told the faculty union, and we kind of talked about this. I've put up this, I've shared the file, the actual document and the article about this, that they were expecting to cut 60 faculty members at the university. Right? So it's like a fifth. Something like that. They were looking and they wanted to get rid of them, you know, yes, through attrition and retirements and all this kind of stuff. And of course, we've got a retirement incentive, which means those people that retired, those lines will not be replaced. So you were essentially getting rid of faculty and cutting the faculty as a whole. Right. And then they took adjunct faculty, which I also wrote about. And they reduced them from full-time status to part-time status. Right. What does that do? It means that they lose a bunch of their health coverage. Right. And then they realize that despite what the faculty said, wait a minute. We're not going to have enough seats for students. You say there's no seats, but you say that there's too many seats that are out there and that's the reason why you're cutting them. No, that's not true. And sure enough, they cut them down a class or two. And then at the beginning of the semester, right before the beginning of the semester, and again, we've talked about this on the show, what did they do? They increased class sizes. Yep. Because they took those students that those faculty members who were just cut were supposed to be teaching, and now they said, oh my God, now we have a crisis. We don't have enough seats. I guess people are going to have to tighten their belts, buck up, work harder. We're going to make the classes bigger. That's what they did. So there you go. That's the process. That's what we're going through right now. That happened before the pandemic. I want to be clear about that, because what's going to happen now is like Kenneth Hawkinson, President Hawkinson at Kutztown University, the provost and all the administration are going to be saying till they're blue in the face, there's nothing we can do. This is the pandemic. It's a force of nature. It's something we've never faced before. Blah, 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 blah. Right. And I could get behind that if I had not heard that exact thing about dozens of other instances, which were the first time for everything out of their control, force of nature, perfect storm. Right. All that kind of garbage. That is just what they're doing. The thing that kills me about it is it's so freaking cowardly. It's just like, and it's like condescending and cowardly. I can remember this years ago when Kutztown University was first going through retrenchment, because this is like the third time, right? In 2010, we had a real retrenchment. Then there was in 2014, there was another attempt to retrench, but it didn't happen, right? We pushed back against it, right, and stopped it. But I was there, right, in 2010 when this was going on. And we were saying to the to the provost at the time. He's a different provost. He's moved on. Say, look, you guys want to cut stuff. We know you want to cut stuff. So let's have an honest conversation about what your plans are. Where's this going? And I'll never forget this. The provost at the time said to me, and this was at our kind of meet and discuss table. He said to me, he's like, you know, but if we talk too much about those plans, the plan, even if they're not finally, people are going to get mad. And like, I saw the look on his face and some of the other people at the table's face on the administration side, and they were really worried about that, people getting mad. So they were not going to have an open and honest conversation in an institution of higher education for a free exchange of ideas reigns supreme, right? They're not going to have an open and honest conversation because they were worried that people were going to get mad. And my response, of course, was like, people are already mad, right? You just don't want to deal with, have anybody have any input or control or question the choices that you're making. And they were like, threw their hands up, right? You know, it's like, no, we're not doing it. We're not going to do this. We're not going to share. We're not going to talk about this stuff. But we have our plans. That's what I mean about consolidation of power. Right? And that's exactly what's going to happen now. Except I guarantee you now is that a lot of faculty and staff, what they're going to do is they're going to say like, oh, well, especially those ones who are not at risk, those ones who are not going to get fired, those ones who are, you know, thinking or worried about their own little job and that's it. They don't care about anybody else. Those folks are going to be like, well, I guess there's nothing we can do. What else are you going to do? It's a pandemic. Look, President Hawkinson really is trying. And the provost really cares. And they're doing their best in a horrible situation. And look, they even said that they care about us. Look at their emails. We're like little starfish. Whatever. The starfish thing, by the way, is going to be a little out the coop extra for members only on Patreon, just so you know. I rewrote this. Anyways, I don't want to get into it now because it'll get me off on a whole lot of tangent. So, I don't know. What I encourage you to do, if you want to get a kind of quick update, go check out the piece that's on Patreon. This is not kind of members only. I should say this at this point, too, as well. I'm going to be beginning publishing my writing, right? My writing in particular, more to the Patreon page as we're shifting a little bit away from Raging Chicken Press as the primary focus. And I'll be perfectly honest with you. I mean, you know, Sean's not writing for us anymore. I've had personally a lot of difficulty getting new writers on board. And then when all that I was, you know, you might remember me talking about this right at the beginning of the year. I thought we had a cool plan about moving forward, bringing on a kind of a particular writer and then expanding the podcast. And then all this freaking pandemic stuff hit, and it's just been chaotic. Okay. So what I think we're going to do, we'll try to consolidate operations a little bit to kind of streamline things a little bit. So, Raging Chicken Press, that website that will still be there. And ideally we'll get a point where we can move back to, posting primary stuff there. But right now, given the fact that we're focusing so much more on the podcast, and what's going on here and posting up to Patreon, it feels like burning a lot of extra money, with the, degree of service that I was having at RagingChickenPress.org, that is just going to waste. And my goal has always been not to just like spend money for the sake of spending money. I mean, it's after all, when kind of members are supporting this stuff, I want to make sure that that money is being spent well. And I don't want to just, you know, hope that we're going to have a whole stream of writers that are going to suddenly think it's going to be a great idea to contribute to this process. No, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not just going to just like bring writers and have writers just like publish things for the sake of publish things so that they can get a little money or something like that either. Right. I mean, that's not, if you're not committed to what we're doing here, right, then that's, you're not a good fit. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we're going to do. And I think we have a lot more possibilities here, with focusing a little bit more on the podcast and some of the streaming stuff that we're testing out right now. And that will ideally, this is my thought at least, so that you know, that will begin to feed back into some of the coverage that we're able to bring to some of these issues. And given the fact that we got all these retrenchment stuff going on, I'm going to get back into that little lane again. So I will still be posting that stuff to our Facebook pages and our Twitter accounts. But a lot of that is going to, you're going to be able to find a lot of our writing is going to be taking place at Patreon. patreon.com/rcpress. Again, any of the writing of the articles and the main podcast, that will all be posted on patreon.com/rcpress for free. You don't need to become a member to come access. There will be, however, some kind of members only stuff, kind of like bonuses, like being able to see some of the beta testing of the stream and that kind of stuff. A little, some extra features that we'll be bringing in there. But the content that you are used to with Raging Chicken Press, with this podcast, with the writing we do, that still is all going to be available for free, just at patreon.com/RCPress. but I'll also have some more kind of announcement-y stuff about that. Everything is kind of still the way it was, with a little bit of expansion at this point. Anyways, I said all that just now, just because I was saying the article that I posted on Monday, I guess it was, Kutztown University makes first move to lay off faculty. That kind of goes over this announcement. You can check out the letter that was the email that was sent from the union president about this. And, you know, it's coming our way. And the expectation has been, what we heard back from some of the folks in the faculty union is that Kutztown and Cheney University, Cheney is the other university, received these things, are not unique, and doesn't mean it's going to be only us. They expect virtually all universities in the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education to receive retrenchment letters, or the have Article 29 invoked, I should say. Retrenchment letters come out later. So I've begun to have several questions on email about how that all works. It's like, well, if you look at the contract, basically what it means, doesn't mean for fall, right? It means that we're notified of it now. They're going to start looking at it. Any tenured faculty member, right, has to be notified by October 30th, I think it is, right? So in other words, this article allows tenured faculty members to be removed, right, for reasons of financial problems. So that will happen in October. Then the next round is tenure line faculty members, right, who are kind of not in their probationary period, not in their first 2 years, but closer to tenure. That's December 1st, and then so on, right? The worst thing is, I can't remember what the deadline is exactly. I want to say it's May, maybe it's March, that adjunct faculty get, you know, of 2021, right, would get notification, right? They're the last to be notified, and they're the ones who are most precarious. That's a problem, right, because it's like you need a job come the fall, right? So just like Gary Rhodes said, the folks that are most at risk, most precarious, are going to be one they're going to feel it the worst. But retrenchment and what they're able to do with this Article 29, because of the pandemic crisis, because of using that as the disaster in the disaster capitalism, what they are going to be able to do is they're going to be able to kind of eliminate sections or parts of the faculty that they can't normally do that without due process. Right. And my guess is that we're going to see consolidation of departments. We're going to see the reduction of the numbers of programs. We're going to have a strong push to put more and more programs online and reduce this. And there's a little secret about this. I was thinking about this last night because one of the things that following this budget stuff for a long time has revealed is that you start to see these little areas. You start to hear from people, let me put it that way, about aspects of the universities and some of the financial stuff. The people who have been raising concerns for a long time, but nobody listens to them, right? So when I was looking at Westchester University, if you remember, there was a period of time when Andrew Dinneman, right, and Tomlinson, right, state senators, right, down there in Westchester, Dinneman, a Democrat, by the way, right, and also on the board of trustees of Westchester, used to be at least, they were proposing seceding from PASHI, right, because their university is doing great and they don't want to be dragged down by everybody else, right, and they weren't getting their way for a whole bunch of things, right. And so one of the things that was interesting about that is that we found that, and this was true also when Colleen Bradley, right? When Colleen Bradley came out and kind of blew the whistle about what was happening within at Westchester University and the rest of PASHI about their deceptive budgeting. What also was interesting is that she found, and other folks have found, that the university was kind of deferring maintenance or was not upkeeping certain buildings. Okay. And they weren't upkeeping those particular buildings in part because when they were looking at seceding, there's some sort of rule that if they left the university, they'd have to pay for the property, right? The real estate and the buildings. And so they were looking to kind of suppress the market value of those particular buildings and those properties by not taking care of them. It was freaking sick, right? And we had some of the documents for it, right? So it's like, so that, but that just kind of occurred to me, right? What is an untapped source of money at the state systems of higher education? Like, how do you turn things that are not liquid assets, like money, right? How do you turn things that are more permanent assets into liquid assets? Well, real estate is one of the key things. If you look at the property of the state system of higher education and the buildings in the backgrounds, right? My guess, my money is on some of the fact that they're going to start looking to outsource even more dorms, some more buildings, more areas, and potentially even sell off assets, like sell off land, sell off buildings. And they can accomplish that if they force enough programs to go completely online, where they can say, hey, look, we don't need the buildings anymore. Or maybe they'll say to companies, hey, look, we've got these empty buildings now. How would you like to set up shop on our campus? And since you're setting it up on our campus, you can call it a research thing and you can get a tax break for it. I have no information about this at this point. I just got this nagging feeling. It's come back to me about four or five times now in the past few days, enough where I'm starting to pay attention to it and trying to dig into this a little bit. So watch for that. Watch for moves, and that'll happen probably at the legislative level, because you remember there were a couple bills that were being proposed from the chancellor as a way of kind of shutting down particular universities and for him to take more control over eliminating programs or forced consolidations, all that other kind of stuff. Watch for that. That's going to be interesting. Interesting, and of course, like, you know, the horrible way, right? I mean, like, just thinking about how those people think and what they're looking at. I would put money on it. Not a whole lot at this point, but I put money on the fact that's something they're looking at. Anyways, so do check that out. Do check out my article. It's Kutztown University makes first move to lay off faculty. It's been posted to Facebook and to our Raging Chicken Forum group in Raging Chicken Forum Facebook group. It's in there too as well. It's on Twitter, and it's up at patreon.com/RC Press. You can check it out. Last thing I want to do before we anything else before the break? No, I think that's good for now. Let me just kind of say, go run through some quick stuff in today's last call. Last call. We'll just throw it all into one. A couple cool stuff. Just following these articles this week about the string of lava tubes in Hellas Planitia and Mars, where NASA researchers are identifying those as potential areas where you could set up settlements. I find it interesting that this is coming back into the news. This was a few years back when there was a first like uptick about going to Mars. People were talking about this stuff. The fact that it's coming back now, I think, has everything to do with the way that this kind of like return to the moon and this commercial race for getting to Mars is kind of putting this back in the headlines. People are looking kind of a little bit more seriously at that. My guess is that you're going to have probably some rovers that are going to be exploring some of these areas to check out what these lava tubes and how stable they are, because that's, of course, what they need to do. Because a lava tube, you ever seen those before? It's basically, you know, places in the Earth, well, in this case, Mars, where there were eruptions and lava would flow kind of like underground or through these cracks and would come out of the side of a mountain or whatever it might be. And then once the lava stops flowing, right, they harden and they kind of form like tubes. And, of course, you got to deal with solar radiation if you're going to go to Mars or even for the moon, for that matter. I know they're looking for these kind of tubes also on the moon and to set them up at Hellas Planitia. The thing that I learned in this article, you can click on it in the show notes, you can click right there, which I didn't necessarily know before, is that there's more radiation in Mars. There's more radiation, solar radiation at the poles than there is by the equator. And Hellas Planitia is actually by the equator. That just might be something that just kind of like just went over my head before in the past, but nonetheless, kind of checking out. That was kind of cool. So that's happening. And then the fact that we've got these large pieces of space junk that are falling to the Earth, or this little one, 18-ton one, that was, could have, in slightly different trajectory, hit Los Angeles or hit New York. That's pretty crazy. check that out too as well. And most of all, for Free Will Brewing, I want to talk a little bit about them today. As you can see, I'm sporting the Free Will hat this week. Even more shout out to the folks down at Free Will. Free Will, Sun Servants is a great, it's a Helles lager. I'll tell you a little bit more about it. That is back, they just kind of produced some more. It was out of stock, it's back in stock. Give you the description here. It is, it's a Helles lager brewed with a base of Pilsner and a variety of specialty malts, hopped with laurel, then cold conditions for weeks. Notes of floral honeysuckle, white grape, lemon, fresh bread, and hay. It comes at a nice, sessionable 5.1 ABV. And it's delicious. It really is. It's a great, especially the weather's supposed to tick up this week. It's going to get nice and warm. So I'm looking forward to it because that's a perfect drinking beer for this. Of course, they also have their mango wheat, which is out there, which I've talked about on the show before. The other one I want to give you, that I do believe they still have some left. I should actually go to it right now to check it out. But they have, last week I mentioned they had a release of the sweet cherry vanilla mash. Okay, I am a huge fan of Free Will's mashes. They do all these fruit mashes all summer long, and they've extended that summer like in both ends. But this sweet cherry vanilla mash was great. I tell you, and it hit the spot. I don't know if I'll have to come back to it, like, you know, in a few weeks and have it again after some of the other mashes are here. I don't know if it, but for whatever reason, it really hit the spot. I saw some stuff on Untappd that were saying, like, yeah, they call it syrupy. And there is a little bit of that, right? And so depending on whether that bothers you or not, I guess some people that bothers them does bother me so much. But what was really nice about this is that you get this, it does have that sweetness, like right off the bat, right? You get this kind of sweetness that's there, and you get that vanilla. But what's really nice is that kind of like those cherries, right? The cherry, the tartness of the cherries really kind of comes in at the end and really cuts nicely. It was really great. I love it. So sweet cherry vanilla mash, I think that comes in at 7-point-something ABV. Don't have it right here. But do check out the Free Will store. They are now taking orders, right? They redid their whole online store. If you order over $125 worth of stuff, they'll throw in the free shipping to wherever throughout in Pennsylvania, which is pretty awesome. Or you can just go pick it up there, right in the Percocet tap room pickup. Right now, they also, what's also a good feature of this, which is why I got the hat on, is that as part of the redo of the store, they've broken down that store. You've got the cans, you've got the bottles, and remember, they have phenomenal sours. I should actually say this. Let me see if I can find this one. My brother and sister-in-law just got me a really awesome bottle. I'm just not seeing it here on the in the store, but it was a pear one, which looked freaking awesome. I haven't had it yet. I'm waiting for that one, but we'll check it out. But anyways, they got broken down to cans, bottles, merchandise, and other. And so in the merchandise, you can get hats, you can get glasses, you can get t-shirts and that kind of stuff. And in other, which is kind of cool, one, not only can you can order like a sixtel, right, a small keg, right, if you want to do that. They have Kregel and sixtels, and they also have mango wheat and sixtels. That is a $105 and $100 respectively, right? So and you get like a $30, the price includes a $30 deposit, so you get that back afterwards, right? So if you're having a little small gathering as everything's opens up, right, there you go, or you just need something for your fridge. But the coolest thing, I gotta say, they have used wine barrels for $55, right? They're and this is how they're described: good condition, dumped and rinsed wine barrels. They have different sizes, but about 24 inches across at the head and about 35 inches tall. So if you're looking for something cool, I've been like playing around with this kind of like garden ideas, side table ideas, and that kind of stuff. But they have barrels for sale. I thought that was freaking awesome. There you go. So anyways, you can check that out at freewillbrewing.store. Again, if you can order online, you can pick it up at the tap room in Percocet, or you can have it shipped to your door. And maybe you get together with some friends and you say, okay, we're going to order a bunch of stuff. We're going to break that $125 threshold, and then you're going to get free shipping thrown in on top of that. That's pretty awesome. Anyways, freewillbrewing.store. There you go. Anyways, that's going to just about do it for us this week. I hope I didn't bore you to pieces with all kind of the education talk today. Sorry. I know that Sean doesn't listen to the show anyways, right? So he's not going to know. But he'll just probably feel some sense of relief in himself at this point that he didn't have to be here and kind of listen to this, right? Just want to, again, hammer this down for our members. If you're a member of the show, if a member of Raging Chicken, you will be able to be treated with a recording of this live stream. And hopefully this came out good. If you remember last week, I just haven't had time this week to break out some of the segments. I had a little bit of a glitch in the recording last week. So there was a couple parts of their segments, not the entire show, but there were a couple parts of the segments where Sean's audio was off and mine was on. And it's just my human error kind of figuring out just that kind of the process of running OBS live streaming and running OBS and doing our show and too as well, making sure all the buttons and things are clicked, whatever. So hopefully I'll break out a segment of that show and I'll post it up for members only too at patreon.com/RC Press. The full video of this live stream from today will be available at to our members at patreon.com/RC Press. And probably what will happen is that maybe in like a couple of weeks or something like this, unless there's like just major flaws in what we're doing, might release that to the broader public as a whole. So basically members will be treated with some kind of early access to some behind the scenes stuff or kind of new things we're trying out. And then we'll kind of release it to the broader public down the road. So there you have it. Thank you for sticking with us today. One more time, I just want to give a shout out to our newest member, Richard, from Bethlehem. He became a member today. Thank you, Richard, for becoming a member. Remind everybody that you become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RC Press. Become a member for little $5 a month. It's like a beer a month. A member of Raging Chicken Press. And I'll tell you, this is what I do. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I support a number of shows. I subscribe to a bunch of magazines, some of which I cannot read all the time. But the way I think about this is that I believe in independent progressive media, period. Right. So even if I don't go through and read a magazine for 3 months and it's coming to my house, right, or I have digital access, which I haven't looked at in a while, I'm still supporting them. Why? Because that work is important of building out our infrastructure. Right. So even if you're not here for every single podcast, even if you're not like reading everything that we put up there, even if you're wondering like, I don't know if I should support it, blah, blah, blah. $5 a month. Right. I know that some people are struggling. I'm not talking to you. But for those of you who actually kind of like can contribute, $5 a month, right? I mean, you think about it. I don't know about you, but for me, once I make that subscription, once I kind of get in there, I don't think about it anymore, right? I just consider that's part of the cost of being part of the progressive community, right? So if you can be like that, you can be like Richard, right? You can be like John from last week. Become a member for Raging Chicken, patreon.com/RC Press. That would be freaking awesome. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Thank you all for sticking with me. Looks like it's going to be a freaking awesome day, or is already an awesome day outside. So I'm going to get my butt outside. And we hope that you're able to kind of enjoy the weekend too as well. And let's hope that we start making some progress, getting us all in a more safe place. See ya!
Concern that if some areas, cities, states, or what have you, jump over those various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having the capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is that we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks. There is a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control, which in fact, paradoxically, will set you back. Not only leading to some suffering and death that could be avoided, but could even set you back on the road to trying to get economic recovery.